It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. Broadcasting from rainy, foggy Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 55 degrees. We're looking for a high likelihood of rain for the rest of the day. It certainly is occurring right now. High of 57 expected. These southeast winds will go to 20 miles per hour this afternoon, then turn to the east this evening, finally going north after midnight. Rain's likely tonight too. It's cloudy skies and a low around 52. We just had a high tide at 11:53 on the east side and 11:44 on the west side. Our low tide on the east side will be at 3:57 p.m. and be 4.3 feet. Over in Larsen Bay, that's going to happen at 5:06 this evening and be 6.3 feet. Coming up on the Midday Report, a popular Kodiak cafe rather abruptly shuts its doors. Ketchikan might finally get their Noah ship. And drug overdoses in Alaska have continued to increase. Of those stories and more after this.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Amy Held. The remnants of what was Hurricane Ida are now bringing intense rain and flood risk from Virginia into Maine. Louisiana, which took the full brunt of a Category 4 storm when it hit on Sunday, is still assessing the damages. Several people were killed and the death toll is expected to rise. The governor warning residents who fled the worst-hit areas not to come back, where there's still no basic infrastructure. President Biden has announced he's headed to New Orleans Friday to check out the damage. He'll meet with state and local leaders. NPR's Debbie Elliott reports hundreds of thousands of people in Louisiana still have no electricity.
The lights are back on for some in New Orleans, but much of the region remains without power. Water, sewer, and communication systems are also severely damaged. New Orleans has set up cooling stations to help residents cope with the heat and humidity. Makeshift distribution points are also handing out food, water, and ice in the city and in harder-hit parishes to the south and west. Meanwhile, search and rescue teams are working in flooded communities, and authorities are trying to get a handle on the scope of the destruction. Jefferson Parish officials, for instance, say the barrier island of Grand Isle is uninhabitable. Debbie Elliott, NPR News.
Biden is condemning the new Texas law that restricts access to abortions. As NPR's Scott Detrow reports, Biden says the statute blatantly violates the constitutional rights established by Roe versus Wade.
Among other things, the new Texas law bans abortions after 6 weeks. That's before many women know they're pregnant. In a statement, Biden calls the new law, quote, extreme, and warns it will, quote, impair women's access to the health care they need. Biden says his administration is, quote, committed to the constitutional right established in Roe v. Wade and will, quote, protect and defend that right. The U.S. Supreme Court, which became more conservative last year when Justice Amy Coney Barrett replaced the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, did not act on an emergency request to block the new law from going into effect. Scott Detrow, NPR News, the White House.
Pentagon leaders today praised U.S. service members for rapidly getting out more than 100,000 Afghans and Americans, marking the end of the longest war in U.S. history, as well as its biggest civilian evacuation operation. Now, the Taliban, which the U.S. had toppled at the start of the war 2 decades ago, is in control. Here's Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, General Mark Milley.
This is a ruthless group from the past, and whether or not they change remains to be seen.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin spoke alongside Milley and acknowledged strong views some U.S. veterans of the war may have, and he said they can't be expected to agree with how the Biden administration ended the conflict. You're listening to NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481- 2400.
The Kodiak Island Emergency Operations Center has shared some new COVID-19 case information it's received for the Kodiak Island Borough. 16 new cases have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough. Of those, 4 are travel-related, 6 are close contacts of previously reported cases, and 8 cases are considered community spread. As of today, 104 cases are currently classified as active locally. There have been 69 local hospitalizations associated with COVID-19. There are currently no active cases hospitalized in Kodiak. They are now reporting 7 deaths associated with COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. More Alaskans are now hospitalized with COVID-19 than any other time in the pandemic, 152. Hospitals in South Central Alaska are in crisis, with emergency rooms and intensive care units at or near their maximum capacity. The head of the State Hospital Association wants Governor Mike Dunleavy to issue a disaster declaration to help ease the pressure. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin has this report.
Jared Kosen is running out of words to describe how bad the situation at hospitals is.
Unless you have to go to the hospital right now for something, or you're actually in that environment, I don't think you can even begin to comprehend how serious, chaotic, and exhausting it is behind the walls right now.
Kosen is the director of the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association. Every time he second-guesses himself and wonders if he's overstating the hospital crisis...
I'm sorry, hold on 1 second. Yeah, I mean, the emails are coming through to me right now from the facilities. It's just...
His doubts are banished by a plea from a doctor or a hospital administrator.
Asking for help on, you know, we're full, we're trying to figure out how to get a patient placed from, you know, rural Alaska to here, but we don't have any beds. We know Seattle's closed. This is insane. This is an insane situation upon us. It's so frustrating that this is just not connecting with more people on the severity of it.
Early in the pandemic, the Alaska Airlines Center was stood up as a field hospital. Kosen says that's not an option now. Staffing levels are too low. Hospitals are already rescheduling important surgeries when they don't have the bed space or staff. If the surge continues, the next step would be to go to a formal disaster mode. That's the mass casualty and triage scenarios they train for, where many functions of a hospital are repurposed. Kosen says disaster mode is designed for things like earthquakes and plane crashes, where the hospital crisis passes in a few days.
We cannot exist in that environment for long periods of time. It doesn't work.
To avoid that, the Hospital Association is trying to lower regulatory hurdles. Kosen wants the governor to declare a disaster to give hospitals more flexibility. Governor Mike Dunleavy ended a COVID disaster declaration 4 months ago, citing, among other things, Alaska's success at keeping people out of the hospital and the state's vaccination rate. At times last spring, Alaska led the nation in vaccinations. Now the state is in 32nd place. A reporter asked Dunleavy at a press conference last week about a disaster declaration. The governor said it wouldn't help, that the real problem at the hospitals is a lack of staff.
I don't believe the issue that you raised is really the core issue here. What it is we're tired of this whole thing, literally, figuratively, across the board, across this country and this state.
The Hospital Association says a disaster declaration would help, as the prior one did. Jared Kosen says it would allow more aggressive use of telehealth and for a quicker discharge of Medicaid patients to a nursing home or long-term acute care, freeing up a hospital bed. And Kosen says it could streamline state background checks and licensing for hospital staff. The state is already expediting the process for doctors and nurses. Kosen says hospitals want a waiver to speed up hiring of other staff, like lab techs and specialized cleaners. You can't make beds available, he says, if you don't have the staff to clean the rooms between patients. A disaster declaration isn't the only way to bypass regulations, but Kosen says it's the quickest.
If it's going to even aid an ounce to making the efforts a little bit easier for our hospitals, nursing homes, and caregivers, then we think it's a good idea.
He says the public can help ease the hospital crisis by getting vaccinated and wearing masks in public indoor locations. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A quick correction, that was 18 new cases reported for the Kodiak Island Borough of COVID-19 today, rather than 16. A popular Kodiak cafe has apparently shut down after more than two decades in business. Monk's Rock Coffee House and Bookstore posted on social media on Tuesday that it had closed its doors for the foreseeable. A Facebook post has since been deleted. Efforts to reach the owners were unsuccessful, but its phone number played the following outgoing message Tuesday afternoon.
Thank you for calling Monk's Rock Cafe and Bookstore. We are closed today and until further notice. We apologize for any inconvenience, but thank you for all your support. Thank you and God bless.
The cafe is owned and operated by a nonprofit formerly known as St. Innocent of Alaska Orthodox Mission. It's since changed its name to St. John the Wonder Worker Orthodox Mission. Monk's Rock manager Herman Hill was quoted by the Kodiak Daily Mirror as saying, many of the cafe's mission volunteers were returning to the lower 48 to seek paid work. That left too few people to staff the coffee shop and bakery that's been a fixture on Razanoff Drive for 24 years now. It's unclear whether the closure is permanent or temporary, and we are following the story. Drug overdoses in Alaska have continued to increase in recent years, overshadowed by the coronavirus pandemic. So far this year, the state's emergency departments have seen about 480 opioid overdoses, compared to 660 in 2020 and roughly 480 for all of 2019, according to Health Department data. And last year, Alaska had the most opioid overdose deaths, 146, ever reported. This year's numbers are not yet out because of delays in getting information from death certificates due to the cyber attack on the Department of Health and Social Services. The state declared an opioid abuse public health emergency in 2017. Alana Habib, a state opioid misuse and addiction prevention specialist, says the increase came as a surprise because overdoses and overdose deaths had declined briefly in 2018.
I think there was a lot of optimism. And now with this increase in 2019 and then the even bigger increase in 2020, it's a little alarming.
Over the same period, Habib says fentanyl overdose deaths tripled. She says in some cases, people don't know the powerful opioid was in the drugs they were using. So along with distributing overdose reversing Naloxone and training people how to use it, Habib says the state is also offering free fentanyl test strips to users. Still, she says, public health personnel and resources have been more focused on COVID-19 recently.
And that's going to take away from any other thing that's happening because it does take precedence because of the significant mortality and morbidity from COVID. But unfortunately, I think we really need to look at how they are all interrelated and address them simultaneously.
For example, Habib points to research on the national level that shows those diagnosed with opioid use disorder are 10 times more likely to get COVID-19. She says that's likely due to less access to information and healthcare, among other disparities. Meanwhile, Tuesday was International Overdose Awareness Day. Habib says Alaskans working toward fewer overdoses will continue to fight the opioid epidemic while still in the middle of the global pandemic. With cruise ship traffic comes an influx of seasonal employees to provide food and entertainment to tourists visiting Skagway. As the pandemic caused many businesses to close, at least temporarily, the seasonal housing crisis was put on the back burner by municipal officials. But with cruise ships now returning, there are calls to revisit the situation before it's too late. Some see a solution in an RV park that's been empty since the pandemic started. KHNS's Mike Swayze has this report.
Locals. It's called the Skagway Shuffle. During busy cruise ship summers, seasonal employees show up to work with no place to live. They crash on somebody's couch or split a room until they eventually take a job that offers reasonable housing. Sometimes they end up sleeping in their cars parked on side streets or sleeping in tents in the woods. Some employers cram a dozen people into bunk rooms. Others have seasonal housing that has no heat. And still, other people have found their best option was to live in an RV in one of the local campgrounds.
And especially when you're, like, married and you have a dog, you don't want to live with a bunch of other people. You just want to have, like, your own little space, you know?
That's Raimi Ito, a local tour operator, used to live seasonally in Garden City RV Park. She and her husband Joe both own small businesses and traveled to the lower 48 in the winter to find work.
It's not like there's a lot of jobs in the winter. So we choose to leave so that we can still bring in an income into our lives.
So that leaves them with the unenviable position of trying to find a place to live each summer. In May, municipal officials closed Garden City RV Park to seasonal housing. They're in a rental now, but they say it won't be available to them next summer.
And if we're having our time finding seasonal housing, we've been here for 25 years, think about how it's going to be for people that haven't been here this long and don't know as many people that we know.
The proposed goal of the RV park, as described by the borough manager, is to host RV traffic from the Klondike Highway. That traffic is expected to rebound faster than cruise ship traffic once the pandemic-related Canadian border restrictions are lifted and more independent travelers arrive. But the estimated costs of repairing electrical issues plus water and sewer upgrades at Garden City RV Park are as high as $500,000. The municipality purchased the RV park in 2013 from a church group for $1.2 million plus interest. It plans to keep it open for nightly visitors next summer, but also wants to develop a long-term plan. Assemblyperson Sam Bass says now is the time to take action.
Then what we've done is we kind of used a Band-Aid fix, which is an RV park, where people have started to use that as their seasonal housing, which I don't think that ever was the intent.
In 2020, the assembly drafted plans to subdivide the property into up to 24 lots. But then the pandemic put that on hold. Bass says there are opportunities to tackle both the seasonal housing problem and the lack of affordable homes for sale in Skagway.
We're looking at duplexes, triplexes, maybe even a condo setup, depending on how it's developed. But somehow, some way to develop and make available more housing for both seasonal folks and for year-round people, because we need both of those.
Plans have been discussed by the assembly to put a new RV park near the solid waste drop-off and composting facility on land already owned by the municipality on the north end of town. But that site doesn't currently have water and sewer access. Bass says that site doesn't need those, and he wants to get started on redeveloping both projects while admitting not much will likely be completed before workers arrive for the 2022 cruise season.
If we're not willing to make the sacrifice now, we're just going to keep kicking that housing issue down the road, and eventually it's going to get very, very bad, where there's no year-round housing and there's no more seasonal housing because it's all full. Then what do? We're stuck.
The assembly had granted a waiver from the regulation forbidding RV rentals on privately owned residential property. But that resolution expired on May 1st, leaving people who want to live seasonally in their RV with no legal options other than to move from campground to campground every 2 weeks. And with municipal elections coming up on October 5th, the issue will likely need to be addressed by those running for office. Reporting from Skagway, I'm Mike Swayze.
A long-sought revitalization of a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration facility in Ketchikan is officially underway. As KRBD's Eric Stone reports, the project aims to give the NOAA ship Fairweather a permanent home.
Local, state, and federal officials plunged gold-painted shovels into two long, narrow wooden boxes filled with dirt Tuesday morning.
Ready? Let's dig in.
The ceremonial groundbreaking marks the beginning of work on an $18.7 million project. There will be a new office building, utility upgrades, and, most importantly, a floating pier to accommodate the NOAA research vessel Fairweather and its 50-plus crew. NOAA's Rear Admiral Nancy Hahn says the facility will support fisheries research, hydrographic surveys, and the local economy.
By revitalizing this facility, we can bring a steady flow of officers, our professional mariners, our logistical support specialists, and our scientists to this city, creating a hub for NOAA's maritime operations in the regions.
The project has long been a priority for local and state officials. As industrial-scale logging slowed around the turn of the 21st century, the late U.S. Senator Ted Stevens used his position as chairman of the Appropriations Committee to require NOAA to homeport the Fairweather here in Ketchikan. The agency purchased a dock and some oceanfront property in an industrial area south of downtown Ketchikan, but in 2008, the agency determined the dock couldn't be repaired and it was condemned. Senator Dan Sullivan, a longtime advocate of the project, credits Ketchikan's elected leaders with keeping the pressure on.
You know, this is a story, what we're seeing right now, of first, relentless advocacy in a community, Ketchikan, all its leaders, its tribal leaders, who would not take no for an answer, right? Who refused to say, we're going to give up this ship, which by law is supposed to be homeported here. And so we're not going to take no for an answer.
He pointed to the efforts of State Senator Bert Stedman, who redirected some federal money to Ketchikan's borough to help pay for the project. The Sitka Republican says he's pushing for more federal spending in Ketchikan.
We are actually talking about the second phase of this expansion. You know, right after we get the ribbon cut, we'll be working with Senator Sullivan and OAA, hopefully for expanded assets.
U.S. Deputy Commerce Secretary Don Graves, whose agency oversees NOAA, says discussions aren't yet underway for a second phase of the Ketchikan Port Project, but he says he's open to finding more ways for the Biden administration to grow infrastructure investment in Ketchikan.
The Commerce Department is focused on finding ways to grow economic development in this community and other parts of the region. So we're open to having whatever conversations the senator and others would like to have about ways that we can drive that economic opportunity.
The new NOAA facility will be built by Glen Allen-based regional native corporation ATNA. Construction is scheduled to wrap up by December 2022. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Alaska's biggest seafood competition calls for entries. More after this.
Grundon's new Deck Boss boots give you better grip, better comfort, and happier feet. Made in the USA at gear shops now.
The Alaska Symphony of Seafood competition is back, and the call is out for entries. The contest has been showcasing new seafood products since 1994, but was canceled last year due to the pandemic. The symphony is hosted by the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation. Julie Decker is AFDF director.
Well, it really does several things. It encourages value-added seafood production, and then it promotes high-quality product made of Alaska seafood. So through the contest, we get to evaluate new products that are coming into the marketplace, and then we help promote those across the country and the world.
An expert panel will judge all the market-ready products in Seattle on November 17th in several categories, including a few new ones.
This year, we're going to have some of our more traditional categories, which are retail, food service, and beyond the plate, maybe made with byproducts or fish waste or things of that nature. But the two new categories are going to be salmon and whitefish. You can also enter in more than one category.
First place winners and the Seattle's People Choice will be announced at an open house to kick off Pacific Marine Expo. All others, including the grand prize winner, are kept under wraps until a February bash in Juneau, where another People's Choice Award will be announced, along with a new Bristol Bay Choice for a sockeye salmon entry. All top winners get booth space and photo shoots at the Big Seafood Expo in March in Boston, where their products will compete nationally. The Alaska Seafood Competition levels the playing field between major seafood producers and the small mom and pops. Bullwhip Hot Sauce by Barnacle Foods of Juneau, for example, was the most recent triple winner at retail, the Juneau's People's Choice, and the overall grand prize. Deadline to enter is October 4th. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 46. This announcement was issued 10 a.m. September 1st. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing for 78 hours from noon Thursday, September 2nd until 6 p.m. Sunday, September 5th. The Mainland District, the Inner Ugak Bay and Outer Ugak Bay sections of the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Southeast Afognak, Raspberry Strait, Northwest Afognak, and Northeast Afognak sections of the Afognak District. As previously announced, there will be a 78-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Wednesday, September 1st to 6 p.m. Saturday, September 4th in the Inner Karlik section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be as described in regulation. The following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Sturgeon, Halibut Bay, and Outer Karlik sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Northwest Kodiak District, the Southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District, the Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, and the Duck Bay, Iduit Bay, and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Afognak District. The following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing for 78 hours from noon Thursday, September 2nd, until 6 p.m. Sunday, September 5th. The Outer Iakulik section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Humpy Dead Man section of the Alitak District, the Sitkalitik, Two-Headed, and Seven Rivers sections of the Eastside Kodiak District, and the Northeast Kodiak District. Closed waters are shown on the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in the Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. Statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record-a-phone at 486-4559.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the first day of September, the year 2021. The sun rose at 7:11 this morning. It won't set again until 9:06 tonight. That will give us 13 hours and 55 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. The record low for this date was 36, set in 1919. A record high was 75, set in 1930. And it is currently 55 degrees up here on Burrow Hill. It was a light rain fog mist falling. We're looking for more rain likely today, tonight, and tomorrow. But for Thursday night, just a 40% chance of rain. High of 57 today, low of 52 overnight. And we're looking at southeast winds to 20 miles per hour. They have been gusty today. They're going to turn to the east and go to 10 miles per hour tonight and finally to the north after midnight. Looking at our local tides, we just had a high tide at 11:53 on the east side. That was a 5.3-foot tide. Our next low tide will be at 3:57, almost 4 p.m., and 4.3 feet, followed by a high tide at 10:21 this evening of 7.4 feet. Over on the west side, and this is Larsen Bay, you have a low tide coming up at 5:06 p.m. That will be a 6.3-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 10:53 this evening of 11 feet. We have a gale warning in the Shelikof for today. Northeast 45 right now, becoming east 25 this afternoon. Seas 16 feet, subsiding to 8 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, look for north 20 in the morning, becoming variable 10. Seas 6 feet, subsiding to 3 feet tomorrow afternoon in the Shelikof. For Kodiak's east side, Marmot Island, Sitkanak, small craft advisory for Thursday. Southeast 25 right now, diminishing to 15 this afternoon, seas to 9 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 8 feet. We do have a gale warning in Marmot Bay. Northeast 35, becoming southeast 25 this afternoon. Seas to 14 feet in Marmot Bay, subsiding to 10 feet this afternoon. For tomorrow, northwest 15, becoming southwest 10 tomorrow afternoon in Marmot Bay. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Board will hold a meeting on Friday. That meeting will begin at 12 p.m., and it's going to be held at the Baranoff Park office at 1222 Chichinoff Street. It's open to the public. For more information, call the Parks and Rec office at 486-8670.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. Thank you.